Good afternoon and welcome to this episode of the Full Purse Raiders Podcast. I'm your host, Terrence Biggs. Well, we got so much to get into, and we are talking to one of the best content creators on the internet. You know him. He's one of us, Ryan Holmes. Good afternoon. How are you?
Doing good. Thanks for having me on.
Man, anytime. The door is always open. Now, I guess we got to get into the numbers that we found out today about the accident involving Henry Ruggs. Now, before we knew all this, people wanted to defend and say we don't know all the facts, and some people were claiming that he was intoxicated and this and that. Well, I mean, going 156 miles an hour. I've been on that stretch in Vegas. I've been to Vegas twice, and there's no way to go that fast without doing, I mean, it's scary going regular speed. What was your thought when you first heard that?
I was shocked when I saw the numbers. I've been on that road myself on Tropicana there by Rainbow plenty of times. And to go 156 anywhere on a highway, on the Autobahn, it's pretty nerve-wracking. But to do it on a side street where there's other vehicles, other pedestrians potentially, other cars, it's inexcusable. And then to find out what the blood alcohol level was on top of that, you know, over twice the limit, there is no excuse for getting behind the wheel in any circumstance at that point. Anyone that was with him should have said something to him to not allow him to do that. But he's got to take responsibility for the decision he made. And as we talked about a little bit yesterday, there's different alternatives and avenues for how he could have gotten home without getting behind the vehicle. But he didn't, and now he has to live with it.
Now, bear in mind, folks, you know, haven't heard, Ruggs also, he registered a 0.161 blood alcohol level. That's 2 hours after the accident. So there's a good chance that he could have had three times the legal limit of alcohol in his system. That is a crazy amount, and it just, it befuddles me to see all this. Now, the Raiders subsequently cut him. Do you think that they were smart to wait for the findings and cut him? Because it seemed like this is the most logical tack.
Well, my assumption is the Raiders had that information last night. They did their own investigation. They probably talked to the Las Vegas Police Department. They knew what the numbers were going to be announced today during the court hearing. So once they saw that information, you could have cut him for the blood alcohol content or the speed, either one, but to see both of them and then, you know, you factor in the loss of life on top of that, it was a no-brainer. They had to do it. They had to be decisive and act swiftly here and just let the other players on that team and around the league know this is unacceptable for anybody in a walk of life, let alone a football player. So I applaud Mark Davis for taking a stance and doing that. They could have put him on the commissioner's exempt list or waited for the NFL to do that and tried to let this all play out, but you just can't defend those actions. And as much as I love Henry Ruggs as a player and on this team, I fully stand by the Raiders' decision to release him under those circumstances.
This is a good move by Mark Davis. This is a solid move. We get on him about various things, but this is smart here. Now, switching to on the field, who do you think steps into Ruggs' spot that is currently on the roster? And then after, we'll talk about who's out there that might could possibly come back. First, who on the roster will step into a spot?
Well, there's only one guy on the roster that can, and that's Zay Jones. Because the Raiders right now only have three active wide receivers on the roster, which would be Renfro, obviously Bryan Edwards, and then Jones. And Renfro's going to stay in the slot. Renfro doesn't profile or fit as an outside wide receiver. He might be able to do it for a few snaps a game when they have two wideouts on the field. For, you know, Zay Jones is about to get the most snaps he's had in a long time in this league.
Now, I had thought that maybe, you know, bringing John Brown back was an option, or do you think that they'll, you know, look at him a little bit later on?
Well, I think the Raiders pro personnel department right now has to sit down. Obviously, any wide receiver that's been in camp that knows the system is we're going to be talked about first, whether that's John Brown, Keelan Doss, Marcel Ateman, those kind of guys. John Brown probably of the group would be the one, just based on being able to line up outside. Now, it's whether or not they feel he still has the speed to get downfield. If they feel he's lost a step and he can't provide that, they may look in another direction. The preference right now would probably be to find a speed receiver on the outside that can come in 15, 20 plays a game and help dictate coverages based on certain downs and distances. I don't know if they're going to find that around the league outside of a handful of guys we can talk about in a minute. But, yeah, the three guys on the practice squad come to mind. I would assume they're going to activate two wide receivers for this weekend to try to get up to five, whether that's, you know, Javon Wims, DJ Turner, Dylan Stoner. I would expect at least one, if not two, of those guys to be active for this game. And then the Raiders are going to have to think. I think they need a veteran. They need a guy that can come in here and step in and play. Because if they have another injury at wide receiver, they can't run out there with a bunch of young guys.
Now, the thought on the outside of the organization was the Rams released DeSean Jackson. Now, for years, people wanted DeSean in Oakland, and people don't realize that there are teams far ahead of the Raiders based on record who have a waiver claim. One, do you think he'll pass the waivers? And two, if he's there, should and would the Raiders make that move?
My feeling is he's going to make it through waivers just based on how the contract's structured. So I think if a team claims him, they'd be on the hook for about $2.5 million this year because he does have some game bonus, roster bonuses on there that he'd be paid for every game that he's active. And I do believe that Deshaun Watson would be a fit. I believe that he grew up a Raiders fan. I could be wrong, but I've read online that he was a Raiders fan coming up. So I do think going to a situation where he knows he's going to get playing time, that has a good quarterback, that can be a vertical passing team, it's a good fit for him. Now, if a team does try to claim him, like you said, I believe the Raiders are 25th. So a team like the Saints immediately jumps out to me. They just lost Michael Thomas. They need wide receivers. I don't know where the Saints are as far as in the pecking order because they have the same record as the Raiders at 5-2. The quarterback situation there isn't the same. So if a team wants to claim him, they have to be willing to take that contract. If Deshaun makes it to free agency, he's a West Coast guy, grew up a Raiders fan, and the Raiders have a good quarterback in place and playing time. So how quickly can he get up to speed? Is the offense similar to what they had in Los Angeles with the Rams? They could get him in for, you know, like I said, 10, 15 plays early on until he learns the playbook. So I think ideally he would be a fit to come in and play for the Raiders.
Are there any under-the-radar guys that you think that could possibly also make that fit? Like, or do you think that what you see on the free agency wire for wide receivers, they're not the type of receiver that the Raiders want? I look at a guy like Philip Dorsett. I kind of think that he might be falling in that done category.
Yeah, so I took a look at the practice squads around the NFL yesterday. He's a name that obviously stuck out as a speed receiver that's kind of bounced around the league, but he does bring a vertical threat. So obviously he would be an option. He's a veteran. I believe he's in Seattle right now. So to be able to go out and look at practice squads, he was a name that came up. Travis Fulgham that was in Philadelphia that kind of blew up there. He had 15 minutes of fame a couple of years ago as far as fantasy production. Could come in and help. There's a pair of young guys I like, Des Fitzpatrick out of Louisville, who's a fourth rounder this year. He's a younger guy that's more of an upside play down the line, but to be able to get your hands on him could help. He's with Tennessee. And then Cornell Powell, a Clemson guy. I'm sure Mayock is well-versed on Clemson. He's over in Kansas City on the practice squad. The Raiders need to find a Z receiver. So Bryan Edwards is playing the X. They do need a Z that's kind of a little bit more shiftier, not the big, tall, jump ball guy down the field, kind of a guy that can work underneath, more of a physical guy that can break some tackles. I think Powell fits there. And then a name, and I know I kind of floated about this yesterday, Raider fans don't like it, but I could see Golden Tate, you know, coming in half a season. He's a veteran, a physical guy, likes to block, can make plays after the catch. Now, he's not going to win vertically, but he's a guy that can come in and help out. I wouldn't be disappointed if they gave Golden Tate a run here, just depending on what kind of shape he's in and how long it's going to take to get him up to speed.
Tate is interesting. Like you said, he brings that physicality, especially going to the boundaries. I can, I mean, I won't. I can't be mad at that. I really can't be mad at that right there. That's, to me, it's an interesting one. Now, when we come back from break, I'll discuss more roster moves that Las Vegas have made and possibly dip more into the game coming up against the Giants. But that's after break. You're listening to the Full Press Raiders podcast on the FBC Radio Network. We are back with the Full Press Raiders podcast. Terrence Biggs, Ryan Holmes. Ryan, now, if we look at, you know, the recent moves outside of the Ruggs release, you have Javon White was cut. This was a guy that I thought could possibly stick. Is this more of a numbers thing, or do you think that Gus Bradley didn't see enough?
It's a numbers thing. The Raiders can't carry seven or eight linebackers on the roster, especially with the needs they have at other positions. It's also why Nathan Peterman was released. He can't carry three quarterbacks when you need to fill other positions on the roster. So Javon White hopefully makes it to the practice squad. He's definitely a developmental guy that can play the weak side linebacker. He's good in coverage and the nickel defense, but I would assume that they're getting Nick Morrow back here pretty quickly. And if you look at the roster right now, they already have Corey Littleton, who's playing well in coverage. There's no reason for him to come off the field. You have Devon Diablo, who they took in the third round, who's played a little bit. He's playing on special teams. He's not going to come off the roster. Perryman's not coming off the roster. You can't move off and Kwiatkowski at this point because you restructured his contract to open up cap room. And then you have K.J. Wright. He's the only real Sam linebacker. So those five or six guys are staying on the roster. Where are you going to get snaps for Javon White this year if all those guys are healthy? And that doesn't even count Nick Morrow.
He got caught in a – I think he got caught in, you know, up in a numbers game, and I'm hoping that, like I said, he lands somewhere because that talent, he has those tools. Now, you mentioned Peterman. When you look at Peterman and as Gruden's pet project. Do you see this more of a final turning of the page and kind of the team putting more distance between them and their former coach?
I do not. I fully expect Nathan Peterman to be on the practice squad today or tomorrow, whenever that can procedurally take place. They don't save any money on salary cap by releasing him. He had a $1 million guaranteed contract for this year, but you can't carry three quarterbacks with all the roster flexibility the Raiders need right now, and they feel Marcus Mariota is healthy and can step in and stay as the number two. But with his injury history, there's no reason to move on from Nathan Peterman because he knows the playbook. He has chemistry with some of these wide receivers. He knows the protection calls, and he's a veteran. He's been around this league, and he's been in this offense for 4 years now.
Now, moving from that, I'm kind of moving back towards the game, which is – one of those. It's when I look at this game, I think you said it last week or the, well, no, you said it against the Eagles that good, you know, you're not a real fan or you don't buy into the trap game concept because good teams win games they should. Right now, if you look at the hierarchy of the AFC, where do you think the Raiders, not just not on base of record, but from what you've seen in the eye test, where did the Raiders fall?
As far as what opponent or what's their shortcomings?
As far as if you had to rank the top four teams in AFC, how would you rank the Raiders?
This is tough. I still think Buffalo and Kansas City when the dust settles. And I know as a Raiders fan it's tough, and people listening to this podcast are probably upset with me right now, but I still think Kansas City finds a way offensively to score enough points as we move forward here. Now, can their defense rebound? I don't know. But if I had to say the top four teams, clearly to me, Buffalo's number one, I believe, at this point. They have the best defense of all these teams. They have Josh Allen. They have Stephon Diggs. They have playmakers. They have a good offensive line. Now, who's the number two team? I don't know. I think it gets pretty muddled. You can make a case for the Raiders. You can make a case for the Ravens. You can make a case for the Chargers, if you really wanted to. I would probably lean towards Ravens just because they, again, the young quarterback, the defense, the running game, they can get going with whoever it is. So I'll say Buffalo 1, Baltimore 2. I'm going to go Raiders 3 at this point. You know, there may be some homerism in that, but I still like how the defense is playing. I don't know if losing Ruggs long-term or for this year it's that big of an issue. Long term, clearly it's an issue, but can they overcome the three or four catches and the explosive play down the field? I think Derek Carr can. It's going to come down to can they get the running game going, and you're going to need more out of Jacobs and Drake. But I do like how the defense is playing, so I'll put them at three. And if I had to say four, without Derrick Henry, it's tough for me to say Titans. I'm going to still say Chiefs. Like I said, I still believe in Patrick Mahomes. I know he's had some rough games. I still believe in Tyreek Hill. I still believe in Travis Kelce. I may be completely off base there. They may not make the playoffs. But until someone finishes them and knocks them out, I'm still going to give them a chance.
Are the Chiefs the best team with the worst defense in the league? Like the team with the – like they're – I guess we'd call them lopsided because they have a terrific offense, but they have a atrocious defense. Do you think that if the Raiders win their first matchup with the Chiefs and barring another collapse and the Chiefs lose to the Packers, even though Aaron Rodgers is out, could the Raiders be the team that actually put the nail in the coffin of the Chiefs this season?
They can because the Chiefs already have four losses. Now, if you look around the AFC, it's so jumbled together. Some of these teams, I still firmly believe it's going to take 10, if not 11 wins for the wild card teams to get in. I don't think we're looking at, you know, wild card teams winning 8 or 9 games. So let's just say they have to get to 10-7. That means they can only lose 3 more games. They still play the Raiders twice. They still play the Chargers. They have the Packers, who are still a good team. We'll see what happens without Aaron Rodgers. They still play the Cowboys. So if the Raiders can knock – the Raiders, it's right in front of them. If they knock the Chiefs off twice, they basically eliminate the Chiefs. Now, are they going to split with them or win both games? They get them at home first. So if they can beat them at Allegiant Stadium, that turns that early September tilt. I believe it's like the 11th or 12th of September – or I'm sorry, December. That could be the last game for the Chiefs because they're not going to survive at 9-8 and get into the playoffs, I don't think. So, but having said that, this team – leads the league in points per drive. If they stop turning the ball over and they regress back to just the average in the league as far as turnovers, this team's going to score a lot more points. They're getting the running game going, and they can overcome a lot of those defensive deficiencies.
Now, in totally unrelated news, but still on a football tangent, I see that your former coach has a new job. Clay Helton is a head coach again. Did you see this?
I did. He took the job at Georgia Southern.
Yes.
I don't know why this baffles me. Personally, if I was him, I probably would have just taken the remaining money on my deal at USC and held out for a better job than Georgia Southern. But we'll see. I mean, he must have been dying at the bit to get out there and prove himself. It's going to be difficult for him. Georgia Southern, don't get me wrong, that's a good – I don't know if they're still 1AA, but at one time they were. That was a good program, but it's not a Power 5 program. They're kind of fitting that group of five, but not even, you know, a group of five team that's going to get talked about a lot. So him taking that job baffles me. I don't know why he wouldn't wait for another job. But personally, I wouldn't hire him, so maybe he didn't have any other choices.
They are a Sun Belt team. And it's a weird job because, like you said, they had great success with not the famous Adrian Peterson at running back, but the other Adrian Peterson, the guy who played with the Bears, the smaller guy. And it's a hard – like the Sun Belt is – you have Coastal Carolina who is smacking people left and right in that conference. And that's a hard – that's one of those jobs. If we had to talk in general about college jobs – what is the one college job? If you're a coach and you are looking to either jumpstart your career, what's the one job that you would never take?
That I would never take?
Mm-hmm.
As far as the Power 5 or outside the Power 5?
Power 5. Somebody said, hey, Ryan, here's a bunch of money to go and coach this school. What job wouldn't you take?
Probably Rutgers. I don't know if I'd want to live on the East Coast and have to recruit Northeast kids and play in the Big Ten and have to match up with Penn State and Ohio State and Wisconsin and Michigan and Michigan State. It's kind of just a dead-end job, in my opinion.
Part of me, honestly, like I see Rutgers. Part of me, what would also see Arizona. Like, that's a
I think
tough
you can win
game.
at Arizona, though, if you get the right players.
I
They
mean,
have in the past.
they have in the past. It's just, that's a hard gig because you have, I mean, Arizona or, say, I'm trying like, honestly, Houston. I wouldn't take a Houston job
Well,
because
Colorado
you're,
probably falls into that category in the pack, I would say.
Missouri too. Kansas, no, you know what? I'm wrong. Kansas. That is the one job I would never take.
Yeah, Les Miles took it though, but you're not winning at Kansas.
I mean, it's job so bad. When they were playing Oklahoma a couple weeks ago, they let people in for free during the game. Like they put out like a bulletin. If you are in the Lawrence area and you want to come see Kansas play, stop in for free. That's how they fill their stadium. It is distressing how bad they are in football. Like they had a, what was the name of that coach? He was a bigger guy. He was coaching there for a couple of years. He coached well, but then,
Mark Mangini, maybe?
yes, Mark Mangino, yes, that guy.
Yeah.
And they had a quarterback named Todd Reesing, I think. And it's just one of those things that it's a tough gig. It's you can't recruit there. It's a basketball school.
Is UConn still a Power Five? Because that would be my answer. I'd like to change to UConn, but I'm not sure if they're still considered a Power Five.
They have dropped down. Like they made one BCS bowl, and it cost the school $6 million to go. And no, they're a basketball school. Either them or UMass. I couldn't. They're just certain schools you just can't. Now, what have you got? Actually, before this, what are the Raiders' three keys to victory?
Well, one, I believe they're going to have to avoid turnovers. That's the number one thing for I think going into this game, that they can't turn the ball over against that Giants defense and give Daniel Jones short fields. They have to make them drive, 75, 80 yards to score points. So protect the football. I think they got it. They got to affect Daniel Jones. The key number two is the pass rush. They have to get after the quarterback and force him into pressure situations where he's not very good, and make him turn the ball over to help your offense. And they have to get the running game going. I think moving forward without Henry Ruggs, the development of the running game is going to be key. So because defenses aren't going to have to respect the deep ball, they're going to be able to bring the safeties up a little bit closer to the line of scrimmage. They're going to be able to double Waller a lot more, and it's going to come down to Edwards winning on the outside 1-on-1. But if they can run the football and get play action going a little bit better, it's going to open up the offense. And they got to contain Daniel Jones on scrambles. They can't let him get outside the pocket and pick up three or four first downs and extend drives with his legs. So pass rush, running game, don't turn the ball over, and get Daniel Jones on the ground when he starts scrambling. So there's four keys for you.
How can people interact with you on social media?
They can reach out to me on Twitter. It's at RHOLM22. That's the Twitter handle.
One of the best out there. Ryan Hall, thank you so much for joining us on this episode of the Full Press Raiders Podcast.
Thank you. Have a good day.
This has been another episode of the Full Press Raiders Podcast. Be good to yourselves. Be good to each other.